Joining us by telephone is Ross Dick, the Justice Programs Department Director for Portage County. A new program, a pilot program, five-year plan with the Department of Corrections. What is the exact name and what's it going to do?
Well, this is being referred to as the Community Cognitive Services Program. The state has placed new emphasis and funding emphasis on working more with the medium risk to high risk offenders, and by medium to high risk, I'm referring to medium to high risk of reoffending. So they're pulling back from the low risk population a bit and putting more resources into the medium and high risk offenders, the individuals who've been in trouble more or where there's been more recidivism. And in doing that, they're trying to shift that low-risk population away from the system, in part because they found getting the low-risk offenders too far into the system can actually have a detrimental effect. It brings them into closer contact with the medium and high-risk offenders. It may interfere with some of the pro-social elements in their lives. In other words, the things that keep them as a low-risk offender, their families, their neighborhoods, their hobbies, you know, their law-abiding friends, things like that. So the state is making this concerted effort to work more with the medium and high-risk offenders, and they are also placing greater emphasis on cognitive programming or cognitive behavioral programming. These programs are typically evidence-based, meaning, you know, academic or scientific studies have demonstrated that the programs in their format have a measurable impact on the population you're presenting them to. So basically, the Department of Corrections understands that there is no magic bullet, but they can look at some of these programs, and if, for instance, they discern that a program has a measurable effect on, let's say, 40% of the people that are going through that program, they don't know exactly which offenders are going to respond to it, but they know that 4 out of every 10 people are going to have a positive response to it, and it may help to address their risk of reoffending.
Let's take a look for a moment. When you say medium to high risk offenders, do we need to clarify that these are a risk of reoffending, not necessarily the risk of, say, a violent crime versus, say, shoplifting, you know, a risk to the community versus a risk to reoffending?
Right, and that's what I was trying to be more clear about a couple minutes ago. When we talk about medium risk, or let's say low risk versus high risk, we aren't talking about shoplifters versus axe murderers. So when they use the designations low risk, medium risk, and high risk, that refers specifically to their risk of reoffending. And so that is what they are trying to do, is suppress the recidivism. And because the medium and high-risk people are most responsible for the new crimes, or they have demonstrated that they are not responding to the punishments and services within the correction system, what you're trying to do is just pour more resources into that and try and do whatever you can to suppress their level of recidivism. By doing that, you get more bang for your buck, so to speak. So they're trying to focus their efforts and focus how this money is spent more narrowly.
Let's try to put something into perspective for the average person on the street here. What type of a criminal is going to get into this program versus going straight to jail? Are we looking at a specific type of crime, or are we looking at a type of crime plus the mental evaluation of the offender put together?
Well, these offenders, if they are medium to high-risk offenders, it's a pretty safe bet that most of these people have already been on probation, have done some jail time, maybe done some prison time. So these are not first-timers in the system. All of these individuals undergo a statewide assessment. The system, the Department of Corrections now uses what's called the COMPASS system, and by using the assessment portion of this compass system, you can better gauge what an individual's particular problems are. And they talk about criminogenic needs, and the criminogenic needs are the factors that most contribute to people reoffending. There are things like antisocial cognition, meaning antisocial thinking, having antisocial friends, having an antisocial personality or temperament, or having issues around family or marriage that tend to hamper their having a normal lifestyle. It looks at those criminogenic needs, what they call the big four, the ones I mentioned. There are also lesser criminogenic needs, things such as substance abuse or being unemployed or underemployed or maybe not having much academic preparation. So the services we are providing touch upon areas such as substance abuse and mental health management and life skills. That, and by life skills, I mean something as basic as cooking or something as complex as child rearing. Courses in anger management. There are courses that address substance abuse arising from childhood trauma. And we are also using the services of a local organization, Justice Works, which has extensive experience in mentoring. So we are trying to get these offenders, most of them would be plugged into a mentor as well, who would certainly have the same goals as other people in the system, such as the probation agents, but the mentors will presumably use a different approach to try to get people to look at their problems a bit differently and to try some different strategies or methods for making their lives better. And again, while the mentors and the probation agents both have the same goals, which is to help an offender stay out of trouble and to become a more normal functioning member of society, they are going to tend to take somewhat different tracks in doing that. The probation agent has to be more concerned about those conditions of supervision, restitution, you know, that the offender reports regularly, the very explicit things that the courts or the Department of Corrections has spelled out for that offender. The mentor can approach things in a broader sense where they still have to keep their eye on what the offender is supposed to be doing. I think they will be able to give more time and attention to some of the narrower issues that an offender may acknowledge in talking with a mentor. And I would say the mentors are also not as pressed for time as the probation agents, whose caseloads are, you know, notoriously big. And even though a very well-meaning probation agent may want to help an offender with a particular issue, the amount of time he can devote to that one individual is probably pretty limited, and we're thinking maybe a mentor would be able to focus on some of those issues a bit better and hopefully bring about some improvements.
Is it safe to say that many of the things that the program and the mentors would address with these offenders are things that most of us probably get with parents and big brothers growing up that they maybe missed out on?
I think that is a very fair statement. I guess for myself, I have at various times when I've encountered in the criminal justice system or in the world of corrections, when I have encountered the word rehabilitation, because they are always talking about rehabilitating somebody. And I've said with some of these people, it isn't so much a case of rehabilitating them or restoring them to a position of functioning or wholeness. You have to rather habilitate them. They haven't had the exposure to friends and family members, some of the other individuals you just mentioned. And so some of those basic life skills or little rules that we make for ourselves that keep us functioning within society, a lot of these individuals have not, I think, been forced to confront some of those things or to develop some of those little rules for themselves. Or they witnessed, in their earlier years, people that were close to them that weren't leading a very straight up lifestyle, and they weren't functioning within the boundaries of society. And as a result, some of these people have not learned to do that. And even though they may be older, there's nothing that prevents them from acquiring some of these skills now. A lot of it hinges upon somebody's willingness to acknowledge that they have shortcomings in a certain area, and with that, that they are willing to do a few extra things to try and acquire those skills or acquire some insights that will allow them to function as a productive member of society.
The pilot program, starting this month, I understand has a small number of initial participants with the ability to grow later on. What are you looking at, say, 10, 20 to start with?
We're starting out with a group of 15 at the front end, and they would all participate in a program that is called Thinking for a Change, and that is a kind of a preparatory program, and that is supposed to help accustom people to the idea of change. Some of the studies of change that have been done over the past 10 or 20 years have revealed that no matter what kind of change you are trying to make, whether that's losing weight or quitting smoking or quitting crime, you go through the same series of steps, I guess you could say, where you tend to contemplate the benefits of change, and then you move on to another stage where you're preparing to make those changes, and you move on to another stage where you're actively doing some things to change behaviors in your life or a situation in your life that's been detrimental. This group helps to get people thinking about the fact that they can change elements of themselves. We aren't, stamped out and ready to go at birth. We are not, fixed individuals, and by changing certain behaviors and certain attitudes, we can change how we function in society. So, again, when I was talking about cognitive behavioral therapy before, Thinking for a Change delves into that area where it is saying, look, if you want to change your behavior, you have to first change the thinking behind that behavior, and once you've done that, the behavioral changes come about much easier. So that group is more preparatory in nature and would get people ready for some of the other groups and services that they'd be encountering as they go along.
What is the target date to actually get this first group of 15 going?
Well, we're looking at, because that Thinking for a Change group, like I said, that's the first step, and we're looking at, I would say, the third week of January, maybe the fourth week of January, in order to get that group of participants going. And then as further assessments are done, we would begin to figure out, on an individual basis, what people need to be doing. People with substance abuse problems are going to be channeled into substance abuse groups and individual alcohol or drug counseling. Individuals who have exhibited problems with maybe battery or property destruction or domestic abuse, if their temper seems to lie at the heart of a lot of their legal problems, then they're going to get channeled toward a group that deals with anger management and interpersonal communication skills, things like that. So everybody goes through the Thinking for a Change, and from there then we start to try to individualize services to figure out just what, a particular person needs that'll get them ahead.
It may only be 15 people, but I'm imagining if successful, this could lead to both less crowding in the jail and less money spent taking care of the problem.
Yeah, you're always aiming to try to keep people out of jail when you can. And, having said that, there are people that are not willing to part with the life they're living right now and intend to still skirt the law. And those people, for the time being, need to go to jail because other things aren't working. But clearly there are individuals who are not committed to a life of crime or are not dead set on the course they have in life, and they are not happy always being supervised by the correction system, and those individuals not liking the outcomes of their behavior are more willing to try some things to see if this gives them greater satisfaction in life and greater stability and keeps them out of jail and keeps them out of a probation agent's office.
I'm not sure if we've missed anything. Can you think of anything we need to talk about in this?
Only that this is a slow process. The Department of Corrections generally wants to look at 3 years of programming, a minimum of 3 years, before they can make any assessment as to whether the programming has addressed recidivism. So as we have results coming in, we aren't expecting miracles, but we are going to be tracking all the services that people are participating in, the amount of hours that they are spending on these things. And over time, once we accumulate data, we should be able to tease out of that data what services tend to have the most beneficial impact and which are neutral, and perhaps there will be some that don't seem to have much impact at all. So once we have 6 months or a year's worth of data, that'll give us a slightly better idea of what we need to do more of and what we need to do less of.
So it'll be an ongoing test throughout the first few years of the project.
Oh, yeah. It's all sorts of things have been tried with corrections over the years, and some have panned out, and some have worked for a while, and then their effectiveness has diminished. And so this is a field that obviously people are always trying new things. Researchers are always trying new approaches. And crime is an ongoing problem in our society, so I expect that there will always be new ideas out there and new services intended to address, the thought processes or the deficiencies, the personal, skill deficits that exist behind a lot of offenders. Some people have committed themselves to this type of lifestyle and will engage in it until they just plain burn out, until they get tired of sitting in a jail or sitting in a prison. And other individuals, like ones we talked about a couple minutes ago, who maybe have not had such a great upbringing or haven't had proper role models and haven't developed, appropriate rules for themselves, a lot of those people aren't so committed to a criminal lifestyle, is they're not sure what else to do. So that's the population we're aiming to work with. We'd like to see, individuals who are at least open-minded to trying something different, because clearly not many of them are happy sitting in jail, and if they don't want to keep going back to jail, they're going to have to try something a bit different on the outside if they don't want the same result.
Ross Dick is the Justice Programs Department Director for Portage County. Thanks for joining us on the phone today.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we'll shut the recorder off there. Real good. I don't think we missed much on that, do you?
I don't think so, and I just, I understand that a lot of this stuff is quasi-scientific and kind of dry to explain to the general population, but it's I can't put window dressing on it. It's just, this is something new. It has shown some potential, and the only way they can tell if it's going to show some long-term success is if we start administering it to groups of people and looking at the outcomes.
Okay. And the nice thing is, it sounds like this pilot project has enough flexibility that you can be fluid with the programs and change as you go, develop new things as you need them to make it work.
That is quite so, and that is something that the state was trying to emphasize. When they came in this time, they said people are, no matter what field you're talking about, they say, look, people always complain that the state is coming in and always telling us what to do. And we don't want to do that in this case. We want to tell you what we know has some effectiveness, but we don't want to tie your hands with regard to how you deliver programs or how you approach this. We want you, to run ideas by us, and certainly the state has to give their seal of approval to what we're doing, but they've tried to afford us a great deal of latitude with regard to program delivery.
And it sounds like this type of program just might be, you know, one of the bigger attempts at addressing the mental health issues involved.
And yeah, you know, quite a few offenders do have mental issues, and sometimes their criminal behavior arises from those mental issues. And sometimes you've got somebody who, I guess you could say, has both mental health problems and they've adopted a criminal lifestyle. But that being said, addressing the mental health issues is obviously a really important area, because without mental stability and without making clear judgments and assessing how you feel about things and kind of looking ahead as to what is going to be the outcome of my behavior, or when I did this 6 months or a year ago, what happened? And unless somebody has the mental wherewithal to make those little judgments, it is hard to get them straightened out. So I think it's fair to say that everybody probably has some mental health issues, but some of the bigger ones that are evident amongst the correctional population, those are the things we're trying to tackle and afford people enough stability that they can make intelligent decisions about their own lives. It's a feather in the cap of Portage County, because we are the county that they approached about this, so the DOC must feel like we have some good things in place here, and I hope they're right, and I hope we can show them something.